From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection for this hour was made about 50 years ago in Copenhagen. Urban planners had an idea. Copenhagen, like a lot of cities, was growing quickly, and it was dealing with car traffic and pollution and gridlock. What if they built more space for pedestrians and bicycles? What if they planned for a future that was focused on getting people outside? After all, Danes will tell you, there's no such thing as bad weather, just bad clothing. They don't mind being outside all year round. But if you talk to the people who advised Copenhagen at the time, there was this running joke that the Danes said, no, what you're discussing is for the Italians. They're the ones who like to walk. They're the ones who like to be outside. Well, how about now? Today, Copenhagen is known as one of the great success stories in urbanism and urban planning, multimodal planning. But maybe you think, well, Rochester is not Copenhagen. Geneva, New York is not Copenhagen. We cannot compare apples to anvils. Well, Gil Penalosa has a different idea. He's the founder of 880 Cities in Toronto, and he's coming to Rochester as a guest of the Community Design Center. He says change can happen not within years, not even within months. It can happen within weeks or days if we want it badly enough. His presentation in Rochester will focus on building vibrant, healthy and happy communities for all ages. And Gil, on his way to Rochester, we expect to hear from him later this hour. Let me welcome our guests in studio. Maria Frigiuelli is the Executive Director of the Community Design Center of Rochester. Welcome. Thank you for being here.
Thank you, Evan.
And also with us is Mike Bulger, Healthy Communities Project Coordinator for Common Ground Health. Mike, welcome back. Thank you for being here.
Thank you. Good to be back.
Well, Maria, you guys have this speaker series, and you're kicking off here in 2019 on Wednesday night at Gleason Works. Is that right?
That's correct.
7 p.m. at Gleason Works. And if you want all the information on what they're going to be talking about Wednesday night, or what the entire lineup of events they have for the Reshaping Rochester series, you can check out their website at cdcrochester.org. You bring in these fascinating people from around the world, and here's Gil Penalosa. I'm watching his various presentations, super, just a ball of energy and ideas. He's advised 350 cities around the world. How did you come across Gil?
Actually, I had the pleasure of meeting Gil at CNU 22, which was the conference that was held in Buffalo several years ago, and his energy and excitement was just contagious. It's fantastic to find people that have a passion for what they do and are willing to share their knowledge and expertise.
And with the series here, tell me what your goal is. When people listening now go, well, what's going on Wednesday night? Why would I go up? Who is this for? Who is this really aimed at? Give me the goal of the series.
Sure. The series strives to look at challenges that we are dealing with in our communities and identify places that have had those challenges and have had some success with their strategies and attacking those challenges. So we really look to other cities that are doing things well, and we want the speakers to come in and learn a little bit about our community and help advise us on what they learned, what their successes were, what their failures were, so that we don't have to recreate the wheel. So it isn't so much about learning about how other people are doing things, but rather how we can apply these strategies to things that are going on here in Rochester. So our speakers always spend a significant amount of time here. Gil's going to be here for several days. He'll be touring. He'll be taking pictures. He'll be adapting his presentation to our local context.
And in the past, you had to make decisions on, do we charge for admission, et cetera? Who's this open to? What's that decision this year? What's it based on? Tell me more about that.
Well, we're very, very fortunate to have Home Leasing as our presenting sponsor for the third year in a row. And that really gives us, it's a big commitment to help us fund the series. And then we have Community Foundation, Rochester Area Community Foundation, who is our community outreach sponsor, whose contribution has helped us provide the series free of charge. And that really allows us to open the series up to anyone who happens to be free that evening or who has an interest, a passing interest. We've seen a diverse audience attend, more diverse than in the past. A lot of age diversity, older folks, younger people. But we'd love to see anyone who has an interest to stop by.
Let me bring in Gil Penalosa, who's on the line with us, the founder, director, and chair of 880 Cities in Toronto, going to be here in Rochester on Wednesday. Gil, thanks for taking the time. How are you? Very good. Well, we were just kind of singing some of your praises and talking about some of the work that you do in advising cities around the world and some of the urgency you feel. So I want to touch a little bit about that, but why don't you kind of give us a little overview of what you want to bring for Rochesterians who are going to hear you on Wednesday night?
Well, I'm being invited to talk a little bit about how to make Rochester, creating a successful and vibrant city where you have healthy communities and people are going to live happier. And a lot of this has to do with issues such as sustainable mobility, walkability, biking, public transit, new uses of cars, but as well as public spaces, the streets, the parks, and both hardware and software, the places as well as how to use them.
Okay, well, and Gil, we're gonna hang with your call as long as we can here, because I know you're on the road and just kind of got across the border here. So I as long as the connection stays strong enough, we'll continue the conversation with Gil. But there's a lot of different themes we're going to hit here with Maria and Mike in studio as well. Gil, I was struck that you point, for example, to Copenhagen as a city where, you know, decades ago, even the Danes were saying, you know, this is for the Italians. People are going to get out and not going to walk. We don't need pedestrian spaces. And now you point to that as an example that you do believe that we've got to look at in Rochester and in cities around the world. Did we lose Gil? We've lost him entirely. All right, so let's do this. Let's see if we can get Gil reconnected here. And as we do that, let me turn in studio here, because a lot of what is going to bring change, I think, are creative ideas. And before the hour even began, Mike Bulger was telling me about some pretty cool stuff that, if you don't mind, can we sort of pick and choose here as we go here? Because sure. I like some of so the Play Streets pilot. Tell me about Play Streets in Rochester.
Sure. So the Play Streets came about when residents of the city came to Healthy Kids, the Healthy Kids Coalition at Common Ground Health, and said, you know, we're really interested in having safe places for our kids to play in their neighborhoods. Sometimes walking to the park is a little too far away from home, or maybe you have to cross a busy road or other barriers. So they asked us for help creating pop-up play days, and that we did through the Play Rocks campaign. And then the campaign was so successful with all these pop-up play days, just sort of improvised play spaces for kids, that we started to think with the residents about how to make that more lasting. So it wasn't just one day during the summer. And that's where the Play Streets idea came to Rochester. So this is something that's done in some ways in other cities. But here in Rochester, we partnered with the city to pilot the Play Streets program. And the way that it looked last summer was two locations were able to shut down a residential street for a portion of time during each day over the course of a couple weeks. And they had organized activities for kids. Neighbors were coming out and meeting one another for the first time. It was really a great success, and we're looking forward to continuing that in the coming summer.
The neighbors really were okay with shutting the street down?
Yeah, well, you know, in one neighborhood, you know, there was actually issues going on with people using the street as a cut through. And so having the ability to shut down their block was actually something that they welcomed. A lot of the times we're hearing that speeding cars is a major barrier for people of all ages to get out and be physically active. So, you know, strategic street closures can actually help alleviate some of those problems for neighbors.
So if it works in one day or one afternoon where you shut down a street, you have this play street sort of moment or several hours, and neighbors are actually out and they're in the middle of the street and they don't have to worry about cars coming, but you're going to go back to sort of regular traffic flow. What's the ultimate long-term goal with something like that, Mike? Are you trying to change culture? Are you trying to change behavior? What are you trying to do?
Absolutely. So we're trying to, you know, create a culture of play and a culture of physical activity, because we know that that helps kids develop not just physically, but also socially and emotionally. And it also helps adults, you know, be physically active in their neighborhood. So we want to create a culture where people feel like their neighborhood, their streets are places where they can go outside of their cars and enjoy themselves. And, you know, we have vacant lots that can be turned into playgrounds. We have playgrounds and parks that can be re-energized and reactivated. And we want to think about our streets as safe spaces for people and not just cars. And so some of that trickles into our street designs. So thinking about crosswalks around parks mm-hmm. and the state of our sidewalks. And, you know, in the winter, are we out there shoveling and helping our neighbors shovel so that folks who are of all abilities and all ages can get about?
Where are you going to do Play Streets next?
You put me on the spot, and it's not my charge over at Healthy Kids Coalition. I believe we're doing it again at Treyer Street in the northeast of the city. And I think the folks over on Greeley in the Beechwood neighborhood really had a great success and are looking to do it again.
I'll tell you why I ask, because I think when people hear this idea, they may call and ask for it. And I wonder, you know, how you decide where you want to do this, because this is probably quite a popular thing.
I think it's very popular, and it's also, we need to acknowledge, it's a logistical challenge for the city, for RPD and the fire trucks. You know, they need to plan for this type of thing.
Sure.
So we are, you know, working slowly with the city to, you know, create the right permitting process to make it easy for neighbors, but also to, you know, address any concerns that might come about. So this is something that has long-term potential. It's demonstrated well in other cities. And I think that, you know, Rochester is on a good track as far as making this an easier and more accessible opportunity for all neighborhoods.
All right. I really like that idea with Play Streets that Mike Bulger is telling us about from Common Ground Health. And I didn't mean to put you on the spot there. It just sounds like the kind of thing that every neighborhood probably wants.
Absolutely. So. And to be determined, you know, it might be coming to a neighborhood near you.
Well, let me bring back Gil Penaloso, who's on the line with us, the founder of 880 Cities in Toronto, who is going to be here in Rochester as a guest at the Community Design Center, talking about, well, the themes here. So, Gil, why don't you tell us what 880 means? I like the concept here behind it. Tell our listeners what 880 actually means.
Well, and I also really like what you were talking about, the Play Street.
Yeah.
Because that has a lot of about what 880 is about. I like the concept for many reasons. One is that the streets, the listeners, when they look, if you look at Rush from the air, more than one third of the city area are streets. These are public spaces. So part of the Play Street is telling people, hey, the streets can have different uses according to the time of the day of the week of the year, and the streets really belong to everybody. And the other part of it that is so interesting is the play, because people tend to think, oh, yeah, play, that's nice, that's fun and games. But for children, it's much more than that. For children, play, that's how they learn. That's how they develop their muscle strength, the cognitive thinking, the sense of belonging to a community. They learn how to develop friendships and so on. So that those places are very important. But going back to what 880 is a simple but powerful concept. What if everything we did in Rochester, the sidewalk, the crosswalk, the parks, the schools, the restaurants, the libraries, everything had to be great for an 8-year-old and for an 80-year-old. Not 8 to 80, but the 8 and the 80 as an indicator species. Because if it's good for the 8 and it's good for the 80, it's going to be good for everybody from 0 to over 100. We need to stop building cities as if everybody was 30-year-old and athletic and create cities for everyone.
So, Gil, on that theme, this is where I want to explore a little bit more with you, because I think that concept is important, because for those, especially in my position, we host a lot of conversations about walkability, about pedestrian friendly, about urbanism, about multimodal transportation. But sure, a lot of the people we end up talking to are roughly 30 and athletic, you know, so and maybe the conversation starts to skew in a different direction. That doesn't mean that a lot of York isn't focused on changing cultures to be more bike-centric, bicycle-friendly, even in places where they wouldn't expect it. But do you think that, generally speaking, modern urbanism is too driven or dominated by that athletic and 30-year-old mindset and not inclusive enough?
Oh, no doubt, no doubt. In the U.S., in the last 10 years, over 50,000 people have been killed walking on public space by drivers. And the people that get killed the most, for example, are older adults. Older adults, because people tend to give the benefit of the doubt to the driver. They hear that someone was killed and they say, oh, they were probably texting while crossing the street. No, most of it is older adults, because the crosswalks don't have enough time, they don't have enough lights, and so on. So it's hard to make a city that is nice. And by the way, the 30-year-old should care about the children and the older adults. Children, because they might have children. And older adults, because eventually they're going to be older adults, or they might have parents or grandparents. So it's about creating a city that is safe and enjoyable for everyone. If we do a crosswalk that is safe for an 80-year-old, it's going to be safe for everybody, also for the 30-year-old. So, and more than 30-year-old, I think that in the last 80 years, we have been building cities thinking more on car mobility than on people. And I think that we need to rethink. And from the point of view of older adults, something that is fascinating is that we're living much, much longer. You know, the people in Rochester should think that the people that have ever lived to 65, half are alive today. This is something that is quite new. If we had been born in the U.S. 150 years ago, which is nothing, the life expectancy was about 39. Now the life expectancy is twice that. So in just 150 years, we have more than doubled the life expectancy. So we're living much longer, but we also need to have cities that are great for older adults. Older adults, actually, I think is a fantastic community that we underappreciate. People retire, and when people retire, we cross them out as if they had died, except that they got 20, 30, 40 years left. And they have experience, and they have knowledge, and they are healthier and wealthier and active. And they could be very active members of the community, teaching English to immigrants. They could be tutoring kids in school. They could be organizing all kinds of activities for other older adults. So I think this is a magnificent asset that we communities usually are not taking advantage of.
That's such a good point. I mean, it's amazing what vaccines, clean air, clean water have done for life expectancy around the world. And so, yeah, planning has to change, certainly. And Gil, one of the things that you sort of repeatedly emphasize in the presentations I've seen you give is that cities can't just say, well, you know, we've got a long way to go, but at least we're better than blank. Like, we're better than our neighbor who may not be doing things very well. In other words, we're not very good at what we're trying to accomplish, but we're comparing it to somebody who's worse, so let's feel bad about ourselves. Instead of saying, let's compare ourselves to the very best, benchmark against that, and decide, how do we get there? But one of the pushbacks is, well, Rochesterians will often say, Gil, you cannot evoke Copenhagen, because Rochester's not Copenhagen, so who cares? What do you say to that?
Rochester is not Copenhagen, but could be better than Copenhagen. Why not? I mean, obviously Rochester is good. If you want to benchmark Rochester with cities that are worst, in 10 minutes you can do a list of 500 cities that are worst. But if you compare yourself with cities that are worst, eventually you're going to look like those. No, I think that Rochester has to think, okay, which cities of similar size and income and level of education, which one have the happiest the happiest level of index? Which ones have the best mental health, the best physical health, the best climate change, the best mobility, and so on? And then try to be a better city for everyone. And I'm really glad when you started asking the question, you said, okay, thanks to vaccination and clean water and sewage. That's really, really important, because that's what people were dying of 100 years ago, 150 years ago. And that's basically why we doubled the life expectancy. So like when people are against vaccination, well, that's what vaccination has done. But today, people are not dying of not clean water or sewage or vaccination, but people are dying of lifestyle-related issues. People are dying of heart attacks and respiratory problems and depression and anxiety. And a lot of this is about the built environment. We need to build cities that will encourage a healthier living environment. For example, sometimes people love to search for the magic pill. Well, there is no such thing as magic pill, but if there was one, it's physical activity. We need everyone in Rochester to be more physically active. But the only way that cities can get large segments of the population to be active is if they walk or bike as a normal part of everyday life. There is no other way. There is no other city. that has gotten people active in any other ways. I mean, people might go to the gym twice a week, or they might play soccer, or they might play hockey twice a week. But we need people to be active five or more days a week. And the only way that people actually do it is if they walk or bike as a normal part of everyday life. If that is how children get to school, if that is how people get to public transit or to work or to do some shopping. So walkability and bikeability, having it safe and enjoyable, is really, really, really important. And by the way, that is, walking and cycling is the only individual mode of mobility for most people in Rochester, including every child and youth. If you're under 16, your only individual mobility is to walk or to bike. So having safe and enjoyable should be almost like a human right, unless people think that only those that have the money and the age and the desire to have a car have individual mobility.
So listeners, I would like to hear from our audience, no matter your age and background, how do you view sort of accessible multimodal Rochester or wherever you live? And when we talk about this on the program, whether it's about walkable cities, whether it's about increasing access to bicycles and changing the culture, does that feel like, well, that's not for you? Or do you feel like that could be for you? 844-295-TALK.
Yeah, public transit is absolutely critical. I think that it's very, very important to have a good public transit, because many cities, for many reasons, obviously public transit is good for the environment, and it's good, but also it's good for public health, but it's also good for the finance. Many people in Rochester are suffocated financially, and they got two cars per household. The reality is that the two-car households are spending between 20 and 25% of their income on mobility. That's one out of five or one out of $4 of the income on mobility. There is nothing that could happen to improve their personal finance more than if they could downsize from two cars to one or one to zero. And part of it is using public transit. So if people walk or bike and take public transit, they're going to spend about 4% of their income on mobility. If they use their cars, they're going to spend between 20 or 25%. So in addition of being something, because some people will say, oh, I don't care about the environment, or I don't care about health. Well, about your personal finances. And by the way, this is not going to be only good for the personal finance. But if people, instead of spending $8,000 or $10,000 a year on a car, what are they going to do with that money? They're going to go to their local restaurants, and they're going to improve their houses and their gardens and so on. So the money, instead of going to cars built in China or Mexico, they're going to spend in the local economy.
Listeners, if you want to join the program this hour, you can email the program connections at WXXI.org. You can call 844-295-TALK. It's toll-free, 844-295-8255, or 263-WXXI if you're in Rochester, 263-9994. I want to ask all of our guests, and I'll start with our guests in studio, about the question of urgency, because one of the things that our guest on the line, Gil Penalosa, has talked about in his presentations, is that if you look at Copenhagen, it took them roughly 40 years to kind of get where they want. And sometimes people say, it's going to take that same way here. It's a slow build. It's a culture change. But Gil has said, you cannot make excuses now because we are facing a perfect storm of multiple factors, traffic congestion, climate change, an obesity crisis, a health crisis, and an economic crisis. And because of that, we must feel urgency at change. I'm going to start with Maria. How do you feel about that?
Well, I think creating walkable communities, walkable neighborhoods, is one of the most equitable things we could do. It's something that provides the maximum amount of access to the maximum number of people. One of the things we get knocked on is a little bit about the weather, but you know, people will be happy to walk if they have an interesting and engaging experience, and that can be created anytime, anywhere. Our weather is changing. I'm an avid skier, and it hasn't been nearly as cold as typical winters have been. So we always have to be willing to accommodate. But you see activities year-round that are well-attended in other cities. So first of all, yes, it's urgent. It's the most equitable thing we could do. And I think implementing such is one of the most economical things we could do. So I hope we can get there.
I love that idea, Maria, that the Danes like to say there's no such thing as bad weather, just bad clothing. That we can be prepared for that. That should be the Rochesterian mindset. Mike Bulger from Common Ground Health, how do you feel about that urgency?
Yeah, I think, you know, absolutely. You know, we face a number of challenges. In some senses, some of the challenges are only going to get more difficult and more pressing. So we have to be ready to seize change at every turn. And that doesn't just go for people like Maria and Gil and myself who are, you know, working on this day to day. But I think we need to look across sectors. And when people encounter a piece of the puzzle, because there really isn't any one magic bullet even to the issue of physical activity, they need to be ready to throw their hat into the ring and you know, participate to the extent that they're able to in their sector, whether or not they're a doctor counseling somebody on where they might go get physical activity instead of just telling them to be more physically active, or you know, a city planner in a department, you know, that might be you know, being open to new ideas, or a grocery store putting in bike parking to encourage more people to bike to the store.
Gil, when you advise cities around the world and they try to tell you, okay, but you know, let's not set expectations too high, and you want to push them to look at places where this has happened quickly, Where do you point them to? Broadway in New York City or otherwise? Where do you say, look, this happened in days or weeks? You don't have to wait years.
Exactly. Well, we don't really have the time. Like the UN just came out and said that the climate change, if we don't change radically in the next 12 or 15 major problems we're going to have. But also in every way, like if older adults are not having a safe Rochester to walk or bike, you cannot tell them, oh, you know, in 30 years we're going to have it. Well, in 30 years they might be dead. So there has to be a sense of urgency. Also, when people say, like, when you talk of issues such as obesity, it's not how people look. But if people are obese, there's going to be problems of heart attacks and respiratory problems and depression and anxiety. And, you know, this, in the state of New York, the rate of obesity used to be only 9% 25 years ago, and now it's almost 30%. So it increased by 2.5 times in only 25 years. So the reality is that it has not always been like this. It has gotten much worse in the last 20, 25 years. And the way that it got worse now, we can reverse that and make it much, much better. So this is totally doable. For example, if we want people to be safe, the neighborhood streets, we need to have maximum speed 20 miles an hour. Not on the big roads, on the neighborhood street, 20 miles an hour. So when you are on an arterial, you might go at 40 or 50. As soon as you turn into a neighborhood, it's going to be 20 miles an hour. Not because 20 is plenty, sounds nice, but because if a car hits you at 20 miles an hour, there is only 5% probability of being. If it hits you at 40, there is more than 80%. By the way, it's not just Copenhagen. Cities in the U.S., like New York City, has lowered the speed. You go to Seattle. Seattle last year, they lowered the speed in 2,600 miles of roads. Why did Seattle do this? It's not because they're going crazy. It's because they want their city to be safe for everybody. So what does Seattle have that Rochester does not? Or when you take a look at the quality of life in cities like Boulder, Colorado, and so on. So the reality is that lots of cities are taking the decisions, and there is no reason why Rochester could not be as good or better than those. And you mentioned the issue of the winter. Of course you have winter, but people in Rochester must realize that you have about 20 or 30 horrible days per year, and maybe another 40 not so nice. But you got over 200 nice days. So don't build your city around the 20 horrible ones, but build it around the 200 or more that are nice, and then even the few horrible are not going to be that bad. And precisely because you have winter, you need better infrastructure. It's not saying we don't need infrastructure. Precisely because you have winter, if you have buses, the bus stop has to have some shelter, and maybe it would be even nice if it had a heating system. Because you have winter, you have to be plowing the sidewalks. Sometimes people say, oh, we don't plow sidewalks because the people do it. I said, why are you having people do the sidewalks? Oh, because we're going to save money. Well, you would save even more if people were plowing the roads. So the reality is that we cannot expect children to walk to school if the sidewalks are not plowed, or we cannot expect people to take public transit if it is not really viable to get from their homes to the public transit. So it is about really facilitating these possibilities. Cities like Minneapolis. Minneapolis has similar weather than Rochester. They have a beautiful trail system. People were not using it because they were not plowing the trails. And then people say, well, you know, I don't see people. Well, you don't see people because they're not plowing. Now they started plowing. They say, okay, let's plow for a couple of years, see what happens. It was such a success that today Minneapolis plows every single trail, good enough for people to walk or to run or even to bike. So they do a fantastic job plowing the trails, and then people are out and people are active. And those are the kind of things those are the kind of cities that Rochester should be benchmarking. Minneapolis has a really good parks and recreation system. But not only the infrastructure, it's not only about just building the paths. Is also organizing the walking path, the walking groups, the knitting groups, all kinds of activities. And why is it that why could not Rochester be as good as Minneapolis for walking? Why Rochester could not be as good as Seattle in trying to make the streets safe? So these are the kind of things. Obviously, there are other cities that are much worse, but you don't want to be a better than nothing city. But you really want to you want your people to enjoy and to be happy. You want to retain and attract the best people, however you define best, whether they are medical doctors or pizza makers. You really want to keep good people in Rochester.
Yeah, it's a very interesting point this time of year when we think about how often we see plowing happen and we go, main roads are the priority. And what happens if they bury the sidewalks? Well, sometimes the sidewalks just stay buried. And I'm not offering this as a commentary on the city of Rochester administration and their public works, in which there are tremendous people. I'm just hearing from Gil, you can choose to prioritize it in a way that elevates walking and multimodal all times of year equally here, not just subservient to the car or when the car is served first. It's really an interesting idea. Also, listeners, before we go to your phone calls, I'm going to get Jim and Teddy coming up here. So please hang there, Jim and Teddy, on the phone. Look up Nuuk, Greenland, not Iceland, not Reykjavik, Greenland. You know, the glacier with a little bit of tundra at the southern end there. 17,000 people in the capital. The warmest it gets on average is 55 degrees a day in July. And they are very multimodal. And it's a big old glacier. So it's interesting. It's just cultural. So let's get our only break, and we're going to come back to your phone calls and your feedback. We've got Gil Penalosa on the line, who's the founder, director, and chair of 880 Cities in Toronto. He's on his way to Rochester as a guest of the Community Design Center. Their executive director, Maria Frigueli, is with us in studio, along with Mike Bulger, Healthy Communities Project Coordinator for Common Ground Health. Gil's presentation to Rochester, free and open to the public on Wednesday night at Gleason Works Auditorium at 7 p.m. Let's get that break and your feedback next. Coming up in our second hour, last week we had a conversation about the rise of plant-based medicine, plant-based lifestyle as actual medicine to halt diseases, and the rise of veganism as a mainstream choice for diet. But some of our listeners said, look, is it really affordable? Is this only for people with a lot of economic means? So we're going to discuss veganism on a budget next hour. Welcome back to Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Let me get to your phone calls. And I'm going to start with Jim in Irondequoit. Go ahead, Jim.
Howdy. I'd like to say that, first of all, that I think all the ideas are wonderful. I even like the 20-mile-an-hour rule. I've been preaching that for years. I think it's a great idea. I think the problem is the elephant in the room in this conversation is we don't have safe streets. What he's describing, we used to have. Anyone who grew up prior to the blow-up of the drug war, so 1980s back, had safe streets, and we lived outside, and we did things. But I think it's been a combination of things. It's not just, you know, people spending more time in their cars. It's been people not wanting to live in the city because it's not safe. And until we address the safety issues, the violence, the concentrated poverty, the amount of idiots we have roaming the streets, I live in Irondequoit. And the moment I cross into the city, garbage everywhere. Garbage everywhere, dilapidated houses, on and on. And until that stuff's really addressed head on, none of the stuff that he's proposing can really work. I mean, we have public transportation. We have kids that want to play. We have parks. We used to have more localized schooling. That's a shame that we don't have that anymore. We all used to walk to school. But that needs to come back. So that's just something I wanted to add to the conversation.
Okay, and Jim, before I let you go here, because what I want to explore is how much of this is your perception versus how much is your actual sort of lived experience, because I'm trying to make sure I understand what you're saying here. So let's start with, you know, in Rochester, too much crime and violence. Do you not feel safe in Rochester?
I've lived here all my life. I watch my old neighborhood go to hell, and it continues to essentially be that way. And I'm talking about the Maplewood area, and it's a shame. And I don't mean to disparage the people that are still there. And you can go to Lyle, you can go the north side of the city. Large swaths of these areas are places you do not want to be in at night, because you will read about shootings and violent acts.
Well,
on a regular basis. This isn't my perception. This is what's real.
Okay, but there is some perception versus reality. And again, I'm trying to kind of just keep working through your concerns here, Jim, because I don't live far from Maplewood, and I have no problem being there. So let me explore a couple of things here. When you talk about you will read about this or you will see this on the news, you know, I think in the last month there's been a lot of conversation about racism and an incident that happened on the news. I think what we missed was an opportunity to talk about why some people in suburbs think Rochester is always dangerous. And when every A block and B block of the nightly news is a stabbing, a non-fatal stabbing with no context, or shots fired on some city street, no context, that doesn't do anything but spur a perception. That
context is irrelevant in those.
Context is not irrelevant.
Let me explain. When it comes to shootings and robberies and whatever violent crime is committed, context is irrelevant, because perception is reality. And you can tell me all day long that, well, it was just an isolated thing between two people. Like I said, that stuff didn't exist when we were younger. It didn't happen. Not that it didn't happen at all. But
yeah, it happened.
It did happen, but not to the level it does now. There isn't the amount of concentrated poverty and despair that exists in certain big areas of the city, and it's disgusting. Go take a drive through any part of the north part of the city, and just look at the garbage that is strewn about everywhere. That's a reflection of the people that live there. That's a fact.
All right,
and
so
it's the same thing in Maplewood, and it wasn't like that when I was a kid. There wasn't garbage everywhere. There weren't dilapidated houses everywhere. We lived on the streets. We rode our bikes everywhere. We weren't afraid to go anywhere. But now, there's a reason people left the city, because it's fear-based, but it's justified fear.
Okay.
And
Jim,
the shootings and the violence. Okay, I'm sorry. I don't mean to go on with...
So number one here, and I got to let our guests in studio respond. I want to say thank you for calling and sharing your thoughts here, and you're always welcome to do that. Thank you. Even though you and I, and apparently I probably don't live that far apart geographically, we may disagree on this. I want to work through it, because some of what Jim said in terms of perception is reality. There is a problem in some places, especially in suburban communities, with the perception of the city. I'm challenging Jim in terms of saying the context does matter. Jim says the context doesn't matter. So in my view, when a lot of crime is interpersonal, and that is exactly what most crime and violence is interpersonal, you know, I think some folks, and I don't know if Jim feels this way, but others may say, I can't even walk down city streets without being, you know, physically at risk. I don't feel there's just about anywhere I can go in Rochester and feel like I'm going to be physically at risk myself. And I am constantly at all over the city, and I have no problem doing that. But Jim's perception is that is true. He sees what neighborhoods and conditions he doesn't like, and he's saying, until we deal with that. Now, there is something that's definitely true, Mike and Maria, which is poverty is an issue that is complex. And there's no doubt this city has concentrated poverty. And that has to be part. So when we talk about multimodal solutions, when we talk about walkable communities, when we talk about healthy communities, poverty is absolutely at the center of this. And this is where Jim is not wrong, at least from my perspective. What do you think, Maria?
Yeah. When you think about there's so much history involved with how people left the cities, migrated away from the urban centers, and what's left, the lack of resources, the lack of engagement in communities, because they have so many other issues that they have to deal with regarding stability, being able to have a place to live that's safe. A lot does have to do with the way our space is designed, as we've made our roads wider and as we've made traffic, facilitated traffic coming in and out of the city. It's really isolated many communities. And as soon as you isolate a community, all the networks start to break down. And once that starts to happen, you see this kind of situation where people just aren't engaged in their community anymore because they're just struggling to survive.
Yeah. Mike, what do you think?
Well, I guess I would take issue with a number of things that the caller said. For one, as I understand it, crime's down, at least from when I was growing up. But, you know, homicides are down from when I was growing up in the, you know, 80s and 90s in Rochester. And, you know, there is a, you know, we've got to face it. We lost a lot of jobs in this region and a lot of jobs in Rochester. And that contributes to, you know, the lack of we built this city for maybe twice the population that exists there now.
That's right.
So it's hard to keep it up when you have half the population. I think what really gets to me is the idea that the state of the houses that have been abandoned by people moving out of the region, by people losing their jobs, by people moving to the suburbs, is a reflection of the people who are still in the neighborhoods, or the idea that the litter on the street is a reflection of the people still in the neighborhoods. I think that's, you know, that says more about the, you know, the person taking that perception than it does about the people in the neighborhoods. And, you know, like you, Evan, I'm, you know, I'm all over the city. I don't fear for my safety. I see all the wonderful things that you see in the city when you get out of your car. You see the little restaurants on the, you know, on the streets that, you know, are side by side with the poverty and with the drug trade. And those are real issues. And fear of violence among individuals in the city is a real issue. And there are efforts underway to try to alleviate that. But the idea of drawing a line around the city, shaking your head at it and saying, well, they did it to themselves, is just, you know, it is a problem here in Rochester. It's a problem in Monroe County, and it's something that we as a region need to get real about. It's not fair to draw a line around poverty and act as if you are not in some way participating in it. And we need to be careful about our language and how we talk about other people.
Yeah, I think that Mike's last point there is important, because no one is going to tell Jim that we don't care about the violence that happens in Rochester, or that the violence is not a problem, or that we want to see no violence. I mean, of course we do. We acknowledge when those things happen. They're always, the context always matters to me, because where you see higher levels of poverty and joblessness, you see higher levels of violence and crime. And when you look back at decades of roots of this, it is all interconnected. So I do think the context matters, Jim. And I am being a little hard on local television news, of which I was a part for many years, because I don't think that context is often there. Now, that doesn't mean it's never there. I think there's some wonderful people in local TV news really working hard to provide that context. But I think that there is sometimes the knee-jerk, well, there's a press release, here's a mugshot, throw it on television. And what do you think the people in Pittsford or Irondequoit or wherever Joe Arrigo lives think? You know, that's what happens. And that's one of the reasons I think the context really, really does matter. And just to kind of prove to you, Jim, that I'm not just sort of saying this, if you go out to Maplewood later this week, you might see me and some kids sledding. There's some great hills at Maplewood Parks and in that area, and there's a lot of fun to be had out there. There's also, if you play Pokemon Go, some really cool Pokestops there. So, see? I know my Maplewood. Let me get back to your phone calls. And this is Teddy in Rochester next. Go ahead, Teddy.
Hi, Evan. So I was going to talk about the potential of utilizing Parcel 5 as being a place to go to for a walking culture, getting people, you know, who are often, I would guess, seasonally depressed in this town, and I know I'm sometimes one of them, I think, to be motivated to come out, perhaps making free or inexpensive events that could facilitate some common good, like free haircuts or, I don't know, massages at some sort of, convention center or tent in downtown, giving a reason for people to want to be there, maybe make it more walkable, beautify it with some landscaping. that was just a suggestion. I do feel like I kind of wanted to say also, you know, Jim seems pretty brave for putting out that comment. And I'm sure that we can all agree that it's not easy to express ourselves in this current day and age where it feels as though having an opinion outside of what the ones around you are thinking is a great way to get your head bitten off and isolated. But I do think that that is actually the problem, that the comment that he made was based on his own isolation. And if he was willing to walk about and participate and put his hands into that garbage and to help clean it, then I think that he would find the solution to the problem that he's saying we have. And I'll take the comments off the air. Thank you.
Teddy, thank you. And also, that's a really well-rounded and, I think, fair point from Teddy, that number one, it's not easy for Jim to call a public radio show and express that when he knows he's maybe going to get some pushback. But it also, it may be reflective of all of the bubbles that we have. And so sometimes when we hear comments we don't like, the easy thing to do is to mock or to, as Teddy put it, bite somebody's head off. And I hope that doesn't happen on this program. I hope that we can try to find a way to have constructive dialogue. But I also feel like, you know, listening to Maria and some of what Mike's comments express are still a need to kind of push back where we think someone might be wrong or poorly informed, or at least with a perception that doesn't match reality. So, Teddy, I think that is very fair, and I'm glad both of you called the program. So just some thoughts there on what Teddy had to say. I mean, everything comes back to Parcel 5 in Rochester, by the way. Doesn't it, Maria? Until Parcel 5 is finally
that's,
decided.
That's how the Parcel 5 advocates would love for it to be, right?
Yes, exactly. It all comes back to Parcel 5.
Parcel 5 presents some amazing opportunities for this community, so we'll wait and see what it holds for the Rochester future. But there's one very interesting article that I ran across that was something that went along the lines of, it is the way we're designing our cities making us depressed. And it's all about the isolation that seems to be prevalent in our society right now. And that's partially related to the way we create space, the lack of interactions and community. So hopefully we can pay more attention to how we can use the way we design space to bring people together in a more constructive way.
All right, let me grab one more phone call. And this is Deborah in Brighton next on the phone. Go ahead, Deborah.
Hi, good afternoon. I am an older, short, thin little white woman, and I don't drive anymore, and I walk all over the city. I can walk from my home. I live near Highland, so I can walk all over. I walk into poor neighborhoods. Sometimes I participate, or I went to MCC. I use the bus station. I really never feel uncomfortable. And I do feel sometimes that the roads are not taken care of. Last winter when I was walking, I could hardly walk on I was walking toward East Main or something like that. I could hardly walk on the street. So that is an issue. And sometimes when I go out, I just say, well, how many humans am I going to see today? But the safety issue, I don't know. I guess I could be seen as vulnerable, but I don't feel that way. I walk and I enjoy walking in the city.
All right, Deborah, thank you. I appreciate that. Maria, you got a kind of a smile on your face there. What do you make of that?
No, the experience of walking is so different than being in a car. All of a sudden, you're connected. You could see things differently. You can interact with people. You can choose to change what you're doing or where you're going on a split second, depending on what your experience is. So it's a very experiential thing. So hopefully we can inspire more people to get out and walk.
I want to ask each of our guests one more quick question before we lose the hour. And by the way, Gil Penaloso, who is no longer on the line with us, is on his way to Rochester, and you can meet him on Wednesday night at 7 p.m. at Gleason Works Auditorium as part of the Reshaping Rochester series through the Community Design Center. During our brief break, you mentioned, you know, changing culture is one thing, but there has to be sort of, I don't know if it's a policy behind it, or how do you feel about that mix there?
Well, we really hope that we could bring some light to the value of creating a pedestrian-first kind of policy. And there are great economic benefits. We know there are a lot of social benefits to that. But, I always say, you know, people will walk if they're engaged. So Park Avenue, people will park their car, they'll take a shuttle, they'll walk, you know, a couple miles to the end of the road and back, and then they take the little shuttle back to their car. But, you know, nobody ever complains about that. They're busy, they're fun, they're in a bunch of people. So hopefully we'll be able to create more experiences like that. The Winter Village that the city created this year has wildly successful. So hopefully that dispels some myths about our weather.
All right, and the Drive to Be Better campaign. We didn't even have time to talk about everything we wanted to talk about, Mike, so you got about 90 seconds here.
It's great because there's a drivetobebetter.com website that everybody can go visit, and it really just addresses traffic safety for pedestrians and cyclists and motorists, making sure that we can all share the road so you can learn some little tips, you can learn best practices, and maybe some of the rules that you didn't know of the road, drivetobebetter.com.
I meant to ask you, when Gil Penalosa brought up the idea that he thinks all of basically the non-arterial streets in the city ought to be 20 miles an hour. Do you agree?
Well, the Healthy Kids Coalition out of Common Ground Health, it's a Common Ground Health initiative, has advocated for that along with thousands of Rochester residents for residential street speed limits to be lowered. It's up to Albany lawmakers to give us permission. They gave New York City permission. And it's also up to our local elected officials to ask for that. So I'd encourage everybody to reach out to their electeds, both state and local, and tell them what a great thing it would be for everybody's safety and our enjoyability out on the streets.
I want to thank both of our guests in studio for being here. That's Mike Bulger, Healthy Communities Project Coordinator for Common Ground Health. Always appreciate the conversation, and it's good to hear about the work that you're doing in our community. Thank you for coming in on this Monday afternoon.
Thank you.
And Maria Fergiuelli, who is the Executive Director of the Community Design Center. Have a wonderful evening on Wednesday night. And for people to learn more about the rest of the series, because here we are in January, you've got events coming up here. CDCRochester.org, is that right?
That's right. We have a lineup of great speakers.
Thank you for coming in and, as always, sharing with us. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
And our thanks to Gil Penalosa, who is coming in from Toronto, for taking part of the hour with us as well, the founder, director, and chair of 880 Cities, who will be here on Wednesday. More connections coming up.